what major health care reforms in Washington mean for the people of Maine. From health exchanges to the expansion of insurance, Maine's health care system is up for some dramatic changes in the near future. How will these new laws change the way that individuals and businesses access and pay for health care? With me in the studio to discuss these changes, Andy Coburn, professor of public health at the Muskie School of Public Service. He's also associate dean of the College of Management and Human Services at USM. Dr. Wendy J. Wolfe, president and CEO of Maine Health Access Foundation, and Joel Allenbaugh, director of the Center for Health Reform Initiatives at the Maine Heritage Policy Center. He's also CEO of the National Worksite Benefit Group. And we want to hear from you. Join the conversation, email talk@mpbn.net, or contact us via Facebook and Twitter. Or you could give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. What changes are coming to the Maine healthcare system? This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Waterville Opera House, presenting the comedy thriller Thumbs from January 24th to the 27th. Visit operahouse.org for more information.
It's big, it's controversial, it involves a lot of moving parts, and it's even hard to talk about. As a case study in communications, one Portland-based consultant compares the challenge as equal to that of the 1982 Tylenol scare. Today, though, we'll break down the Affordable Care Act into its basic components, talk about how each of them will affect you. We'd like you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, the number to call. We'll go to the phones in a few minutes. First, though, let's dive right into this. And Wendy Wolfe of the Maine Health Access Foundation, where are we in the implementation of this incredibly large piece of legislation that will affect all of our lives?
Actually, Maine's in a great position, mainly because people who are working in healthcare in Maine have really come together for many, many years to try and do the very things that the Federal Affordable Care Act is trying to promote. Changing how we deliver care so it delivers better value, doing things that have more impact on patients and manage chronic disease. And Maine has tried a number of insurance reforms, and the Federal Affordable Care Act has really learned from states like Maine and Massachusetts in framing this law. So we've thought a lot about how to make healthcare more accessible and affordable for a long period of time, and I think we're well positioned to try and implement a lot of things in the Affordable Care Act, including the insurance reforms, which we can talk a whole lot during the hour.
So what has already happened? This was enacted in 2010. Some of the big stuff doesn't happen until next year even. Are we sort of in midstream, or where are we?
I would say we're in early stream. So midstream would be very probably another few years from now. But the Affordable Care Act actually rolls out over several years' time. And if you think about changing something as large as healthcare, which accounts for about 18% of our gross national product, it really is like trying to make a hard right turn with a huge oil tanker. You say, turn now, and probably after you've gone 50 miles, you're bearing right. It's going to take a long time to get all these moving parts in place. But we've already thought through a lot of these things in Maine very carefully about how do we expand affordable health insurance. The Dirigo Health Act, which was signed into law by Governor Baldacci, actually had a lot of the same principles that are in the Affordable Care Act and the establishment of health insurance exchanges, such as how do we help small businesses and individuals get an affordable product in our market? How do we help them perhaps with subsidies so they can find affordable premiums? These are the same things that are going to happen in the Affordable Care Act when we establish health insurance exchange, or when the federal government establishes a health insurance exchange for states that opt not to do that.
We'll talk about exchanges as well, of course. Andy Coburn of the Muskie School, some of these components have been tested in the courts, including this mandatory purchase of health insurance that's part of it and indeed essential, some would argue, to its success. That's been tested. Are there other things, that parts that haven't been tested yet that there are big question marks about?
From a legal perspective?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that there – I mean, there will be challenges, I'm sure, going forward on probably many different provisions of the ACA. Whether those are – there, none of them is as significant as the test that this law went through with the Supreme Court this past June. So I think those are not as significant as perhaps the implementation challenges that we still face, which involve a whole series of choices that – I think states are going to have to make, and businesses are going to have to make, that are all going to, as Wendy said, unfold over the course of the next year and a half, which I think are, you know, critical years in the implementation of this act.
So through the eyes of the average Maine citizen, what is it that they should be paying attention to or watching out for as this is implemented?
Well, I think first of all, they are already feeling the implementation. If you many of the provisions of the law have been implemented, so that we've just now had studies that have shown the impact of, for example, the expansion of coverage to young adults. You know, we've had the law has already had a major impact in expanding coverage to that population.
So that's allowing them to stay on their parents' insurance.
Allowing them to stay
on
their
parents. Even though they're out into the world.
So there are lots of things that are already underway that are really important on the public health side. But I think there are going to be employers, for example, over the course of the next year are really going to be focused on this question of how do we fit small employers in particular, but also individuals. Are going to be focused on the question of how are things going to change in 2014 when exchanges will be in place and when the purchase of insurance will be different than it is now potentially.
And Joel Allenbaugh, specifically employers who are of a certain size, a certain number of people, around 50 or 60. And why is that of particular concern?
Well, the employer mandate, which is essentially the requirement of an employer to offer coverage to full-time employees or face penalties, kicks in at the magic number 50. And so employers really need to be paying attention to that. There are implications that will affect them. The challenge, I think, for the employers is that how they define 50 and how the law defines 50 may not jive. So they need to really look at that piece first. For example, I might have 25 full-time employees and say, well, I'm not 50. But if I've got 300 part-time employees or seasonal employees that work in excess of 120 days, which is a whole another sub-issue, I might actually fall into that territory, and that has implications for me as an employer.
So in other words, if you're in the hospitality industry and you operate you have the equivalent of 50 full-time employees who work more than 120 days, which many of these seasonal operations would, you'd still have to pay their health insurance over the winter when you were shuttered.
Correct, or potentially pay fines if you chose not to.
And in some cases, employers might choose to pay the fine because it's cheaper.
Yeah, they could. You know, one thing I would say is every employer really needs to look at this for their own company, because it really is different from company to company how this will impact. But yes, as we do cost analysis, there are a surprising number of scenarios where the cheapest way out, if you will, is to drop coverage, which is an interesting dynamic when you consider that having people in the pool, if you will, the whole concept of the individual mandate, which is so people who are healthy by now, if that end result isn't achieved with the regulations, we've got a real problem.
You could also shrink your company to make sure you're below 50.
You could, or you could change your workforce to all part-time employees, you know, which is some of the things we're hearing from some of the national restaurant chains.
But Wendy Wolf, are these specifics in this law that will play out in the cases that Joel's talking about and maybe be altered so they don't have the negative effects that might happen?
I certainly hope so. I think what we're talking about here is a enormous piece of legislation with lots and lots of different moving parts. And like any legislation, the way it's written in the law is the intent. But the way it gets implemented is the real test of reality. Is this going to work to achieve the aims that the legislation wants to accomplish, which is expanding health insurance and improving health care and helping people, frankly, have healthier, more productive lives. So Joel, Andy, and I have talked a lot, and none of us really feel probably every element of the Affordable Care Act is perfect, and it needs to come to light what doesn't work for the people of Maine. And then we need to take that information to our congressional delegation, our leaders, and say, geez, you know, when they were thinking about seasonal employees, they were probably thinking about California and the farm workers, and that length of time is really not what Maine's seasonal employment really represents. So how do we begin making the law work for us here in Maine?
So is it possible to have customized versions of the federal law for each state, or just flexibility in the implementation?
Well, I'd certainly say the administration has shown more and more flexibility in working with states to try and make the law work and work within our own context. We see that in the changing way that states can determine what sort of exchange that they're going to have. There have been now a whole new offering of working with states in partnership, whereas the law first was you'd either pick a federal exchange or a state exchange. Now they've said, well, maybe not. You don't have to decide right now. You could pick one thing. We'll work with you. You might come back to us and have a evolving type of exchange. So I think what they're trying to do is acknowledge that there are going to be a lot of things that we need to talk about to tease out, and we need to give feedback where the law is not working well.
All right. You've mentioned exchange now a couple of times. I think we have to go there. Andy Coburn, these exchanges, it's a word that's used a lot, but what essentially is it? What is an exchange?
An exchange is a virtual marketplace that operates, that establishes both rules under which insurance companies have to operate for the small group and individual market and potentially the large group market later, but establishes the infrastructure, if you will, for enabling small businesses and individuals to make choices, to identify and make choices with regard to products that will be available. It has responsibilities for defining, for example, what coverages have to be provided through the exchange products that will be available. It will regulate how insurers rate products. I mean, there are a whole variety of functions. They'll have outreach functions in order to for enrollment purposes. They will connect in a number of states. There's a lot of effort to connect with public programs like the Medicaid program, MaineCare here in Maine, so that there's more of a seamless availability of coverage for people who move from public to private coverage, which happens quite frequently. So the exchanges are really important. One piece that I would say to follow on the conversation you just had with Dr. Wolf is that this question of how the small employer market participates in exchanges and how does customize the exchange to meet the needs and recognize the current system that we have for purchase of insurance in that group market is really important. And we don't have all the answers, quite frankly. Massachusetts has shown that there are challenges in getting small employers into the insurance market, and there are a lot of choices that they have already. And so the exchange is not an automatic, silver bullet for getting uninsured small businesses into coverage.
I read somewhere where it was described as a kind of a Travelocity, a website.
Yes.
Where you would you'd have different providers and packages, and you could compare them and make your choice. Is that one version of it?
Well, that's one version of it, and we do this in the Medicare program, for example, for older people who purchase Part D coverage, so-called, for prescription medications. There's a website, and plans offer their plans, and you could do comparison shopping on all kinds of price and equivalency of drugs basis.
Joel Allenbaugh, what are your constituents' concerns around these exchanges, or at least as much as we know about them?
And probably a few, and I work as a broker by trade, and I guess you could say that the brokerage community today is essentially the exchange, where individuals come to get information about products and compare and get advice, et cetera. Health insurance is pretty complicated from a whole host of different fronts, and one is, will they have the guidance that they need, I guess, is one concern. The exchanges also are really where the subsidies happen. And what happened in Massachusetts was that primarily the folks who populated the exchange were individuals who were qualifying for subsidies, which makes sense to me. Not a lot of small businesses. But small businesses have a whole host of other issues to deal with around the concept of offering health insurance benefits that aren't necessarily going to be addressed. Are you going to take a deduction from your employees? You're going to do it on a pre-tax basis. Now you run into Section 125 rules. And there's just a whole host of different things that they have to navigate that wouldn't necessarily be handled within the context of an exchange. But one point that I would make is that I think one of the next big legal challenges coming is really related to the individual subsidies through a federal exchange. And there are a number of folks who seem to think that the law authorized individual subsidies through state exchanges specifically and not federal exchanges. And for the employer community, everything related to a penalty for an employer is triggered first by one of their employees going to one of these exchanges and qualifying and purchasing a subsidized policy. So, right. So there's implications there.
Yeah, we're getting into the weeds and that's good, but I got to take a break. We'll take a quick break and come back to this important discussion. We welcome your comments and questions as well. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
This week on Maine Watch, studies show 1 in 4 high school students has been bullied. Now the state has new guidelines for schools in dealing with bullying and cyberbullying. We'll discuss how to keep our schools safe for all students with 2 experts, plus a high school sophomore targeted with death threats. Plus, we'll meet one of the producers of Hard Water, a new film about ice fishing in Maine.
Join us for Maine Watch tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 9 on MPBN Television or tomorrow afternoon at 12:30 here on MPBN Radio.
Famous first lines.
Say, nation, in the wake of quarrels, say, hope.
Poet Kwame Dawes for a people's poem for the inauguration. Takeaway listeners have already added lines by tweeting to the hashtag PrezPoem. That's Prez with a Z. Part of our inauguration coverage on The Takeaway from Public Radio International.
Join us for The Takeaway this evening at midnight. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Sweetser, seeking mentors for children with mental and behavioral health needs. Learn more at sweetser.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, the future of healthcare in Maine. With me in the studio, Andy Coburn, professor of public health at the Muskie School of Public Service at the University of Southern Maine, Wendy Wolf, president and CEO of Maine Health Access Foundation, and Joel Allenbaugh, director of the Center for Health Reform Initiatives at the Maine Heritage Policy Center and CEO of the National Worksite Benefit Group, Inc. We'd like you to join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to the phones in a minute. But Joel Allenbaugh, I also wanted to follow up. You mentioned you were a broker. Is this not a good thing for insurance companies, as there'll be a lot more new customers in the market as mandated by the government?
It could be a good thing for insurance companies. They got a lot of big subsidies coming their way for people to purchase their products. However, if it disrupts the market and doesn't achieve the end results, it could be a good thing for a short window of time. So if the market collapses under the weight, then maybe it's not a good thing.
Yeah. Wendy Wolf, how do the subsidies work? Is that an income trigger or –
Yes. Yeah. The subsidies are really based on income level. And what happens is there's a monthly premium assistance tax credit, and it's based on income, starting with people with very low incomes, which is under 133% of the federal poverty level. They will receive subsidies. And then the subsidies begin to get less and less as you go higher on the income scale, up to about 400% of the federal poverty level, which is about $89,000 for a family of four.
So there are subsidies. I mean, that's not a lot of money, but it's also, you know, people can live on that.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And I think this is trying to address one of the major concerns about affordability of health insurance and realizing that a lot of people can't enter into the health insurance market because they simply do not have the income to participate fully and stay in the health insurance market.
And before I go to the phones, we also wanted to get into Medicare. So we've talked about individuals. We've talked about small businesses and employers. What about those folks who are on Medicare or about to be eligible for Medicare in 2014?
Well, there are some great things that have happened to the Medicare program through the Affordable Care Act and things that I think all of us want to see happen. Medicare was originally established mostly as a program to pay for hospital care. And so seniors really didn't have coverage for things like preventive visits, screening tests that all of us think people ought to be having, things like prostate screening, mammograms, et cetera. Now under the ACA, seniors have the opportunity to have an annual wellness visit with their doctor where they really sit down and talk about, what do I need to do to be healthy? They also don't have any cost sharing to receive the same sort of preventive screenings that you and I can now receive if we are in the health insurance market also. And most importantly, the dreaded donut hole that was there for seniors in the prescription drug program is closing over the course of the next couple years. Seniors received a rebate the first year after the Affordable Care Act passed, and eventually that donut hole will be closed. And that will give seniors much more seamless access to medications that are really vital to treat many chronic illnesses.
All right. Lots more to talk about, including how is this going to keep the cost of health care down. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, though, waiting patiently in Danforth is Oliver. Hi, Oliver. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hello.
Go ahead.
We have a question for your panel of experts concerning the shortfall in state income from which to pay for the medical services that are used by the poor through Maine Care. And the governor's proposition that a new stream of income be generated through making the state the vendor of liquor, as it used to be. The current situation of one of $5 from the GDP being devoted to health care and our aged population in the state of Maine consuming an enormous share of health care mandates some sort of additional income.
Well, let's talk about that. Is there a problem in the accounting, Joel Ellenbaugh?
Well, I think there's a couple issues there, too. I mean, the shortfall for Medicaid is obviously an issue we run into over and over and over and over again, which is essentially that we're not set up in our budgets and funding for what the expected costs really are from year to year. That's going to be a persistent problem until we fix that. My understanding is that the revenue from the beverage sales is intended to be utilized to pay back the hospital debt that Medicaid has not paid over the years.
1-800-399-3566 to Richmond and Alice. Hi, Alice.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted, you know, I'm the persistent voice for the inconvenient truth that nothing that the state or the feds have done solve the problem of the uninsured, which will continue to exist. The premium subsidies cap out, as Dr. Wolf said, at 400% of federal poverty. That number is projected by the Kaiser Foundation to be $46,000 in 2014, which I keep pointing out is less than what the average teacher makes. And if you look at the Kaiser subsidy calculator, it projects that if you earn 401% of federal poverty, which is projected to be $46,136, you're looking at a premium expense of about $750 a month in a high-cost state such as Maine for someone like myself who's over 50. And that $750 a month premium is for a plan that has a $3,000 deductible and another $3,000 in out-of-pocket coinsurance after the deductible. And that's the reason that the government studies are showing that even with full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, we're still throwing about 10% of our population overboard. And we also ignore or don't speak to the popular mythology, well, oh, those uninsured people just get the care they need at the emergency room, which is not true. I'm a health lawyer, and the only thing the hospitals have to do is screen and stabilize. So if you go in with a persistent pain and they diagnose you with a malignant cancer, they're under no obligation, nor can you expect them to invite you to come back for the free course of radiation and chemo that an insured patient would receive. So I continue to find it absolutely outrageous that nobody's talking about the fact that we are killing 45,000 Americans a year who do not have insurance, and we're the only industrial country in the world that doesn't have a universal health care system. And we could dispense with all of these problems if we would simply, you know, embrace a full system change and okay. go to a true universal health care.
Sure. Alice, let's bring in the group here. Wendy, you want to go first?
Well, I think Alice makes some really excellent points that even with full and ideal implementation of the Affordable Care Act, they really know that that will not provide universal access to health insurance coverage for everyone. The national estimates are about 30 million people will remain uninsured. And Alice is right. The United States is the only industrialized country, a wealthy country, that does not provide universal health care for all of its citizens. So I think that there are many people that feel that this did not go far enough. I do think one of the things that is not talked about enough, as Alice brought up, is there will still be people who are uninsured, either by the fact that they will not fall into groups that can access insurance exchanges, they don't make enough money, or they choose not to enroll because financially it doesn't make sense for them. Hospitals and providers will still take care of people who are uninsured. They do now, and they will continue to do so. And so we need to make sure that everyone is benefiting from a health care system that provides needed services and tries to include us all in being healthy. That part of the ACA is a weakness, and I think we're going to have to think carefully in Maine about how everyone can benefit from this.
Yeah. Andy?
I would just say that I think Alice's question or comment brings to light what I think is the fundamental dilemma in our healthcare system, which is we need to get everybody into the system and get them insured. But that's a very expensive proposition when you have a healthcare system that is as expensive as our system is and as inefficient and some would say not very effective in its performance. So I think it raises the whole question of what kind of a healthcare system can we afford? And, you know, insurance is a function of how much it costs to provide healthcare, and we provide a lot more healthcare at much higher prices than most other countries. And that's the problem that we have to face. And we don't